Hello, everyone, and welcome back to I Couldn't Be a YouTuber, so I decided to make a podcast instead. Episode number 56, if it ever gets released. Military-style web novels. The tag is also called Jingshi. Jing generally meaning soldier. Jiang, meaning it could be considered head of. I'm actually not 100% sure on the meaning of that, but I know how it'd be used. And then Jing meaning, you know, head or chief soldier, right, chief officer. So Jingshi just means military matters or soldier matters. There's another tag called Lishi. Lishi is different. It's more to do with history. But you'll see a lot of cross intersection between history tag and the military tag. Now, Before we start, let's get into a little bit. This might actually turn into a YouTube video if I could keep it short enough. But there's also a lot of what I would call politically sensitive topics that may carry some non-mainstream or unpopular opinions. Not along the lines of conspiracy theory, but it's more like non-mainstream knowledge that has certain tints to it that just makes it worrisome to express. Now, thankfully, we live in a world where freedom of speech is actually relatively protected, but it still makes me very nervous to mention it, because there's always consequences to what you say, regardless of what people say or do. Actions definitely speak louder than words, but we'll get into some very topics that are sensitive. I think the Western intention, positive intention, would call it political correctness, but, you know, for more Asian-aligned and more censored countries, they would call it politically sensitive matters, or what is it, not ideological, not proper ideological or cultural education, right? We're talking about various countries along the Middle East and Asia, which are accustomed to censorship, will carry sort of sensitivity to that. Anyway, not too much more meta conversation. Let's get into the military style web novels and the various titles we'll talk about. So the military genre. This is a genre I haven't previously engaged with much, but I have dabbled in some of it. And I will say the military genre is very fascinating, especially within the Chinese web novel sphere. A lot of it goes back into historical context, and a lot of it has to do with historical figures, right? Things like the Three Kingdoms, Spring and Autumn period, Zongqiu, Spring and Autumn period, Three Kingdoms, Sanguo, with Cao Cao, Zhuge Liang, and Liu Bei, right? I've seen so many different perspectives. I've seen it from religion. I've seen it from fantasy, right? You'll see a lot of these historical trends that people like to use, for example, because they have historical precedent to rely upon and tell a story from. I've seen a conflict of Buddhism versus legalism, which is, you know, like the emperor's authority, religion, Jianghu, right? So rivers and lakes, right? Among the people, martial art practitioners, and religion. All of this is a huge mess, right? You have the court, palace, the eunuchs, the emperor, the various intelligence organizations, which we will get into, right? The bright side, the Yamen, I think is what it's called. That's the legal, the court system, right? The corrupt court system. Then you have the eunuchs, which are another faction of power. You have the palace, you have the ministers, right? People who actually implement policy. You have the scholars, the people who are in the educational institution system providing education. The teachers, right? Teachers are a very noble profession. The researchers, right? Researchers are actually considered much lower down on the list, but they're a part of the scholar faction. You have the religious factions such as Buddhism, Confucianism, right? Legalism, right? A lot of these legal ministers, eunuchs are usually people who criticize. They also handle important inner palace tasks. They're also kind of like servants, because there's a lot of power held by generational lineage or heritage, inheritance, right? Having children is a power in and of itself, in Asian culture. There's probably a lot more of the shogun and the samurai as well, but we're not going to get too much into depth. But it's always interesting to see these various things. Practitioner or wuxi stories will always talk about Buddhism. They'll always say there's various Buddhist values, but very Asian Buddhist values. They don't talk about like the ninefold path or like the seven desires. They talk about things like, if I don't go to hell, who will? Right? This justification for why Buddhism can be pacifist or non-pacifist, right? You know, Buddhist warrior monks, right, of Honganji and the Japanese and the Sengoku Jidai, right? Japanese Buddhism, Korean Buddhism, and Chinese Buddhism are all very different compared to, you know, Indian Buddhism and Sanskrit and whatnot, but we're not going to go too much into the differences of it because I'm not too familiar. Then along the religious path, you have Buddhism, you have the empire state religion, right? Very much, well, not necessarily, they would call it barbarian or paganism in the West, but it would be considered more a belief in deities, in natural spirits, right? The river god, dragons and phoenix, right? Like, because you hold a respect or reverence to natural phenomena such as solar eclipses, the various mythological deities, Panku, that's like the creator god in Chinese myth. You have Ne Zha, right? Shioji, the Journey of the West, but that's much more of a fantasy story rather than a creation myth. It could be considered a creation myth of sorts, right? The moon goddess, right? That's always very big in religion, right? China was very much based in very much dabbled with or assigned their calendar to the moon rather than the sun, as you'd see with Aztecs and Native American cultures. Native because American means north and south. Sorry, it's hard to remember the distinction. Right, Quetzalcoatl. I probably pronounced that wrong. Oh, Huchli Puchli. Ah, that's so wrong. Okay, I'm not gonna say those names because it's just, oh my lord, even the pronunciation of that was rough. But I had to Amun-Ra, right? The goddess of the sun in Egypt. And you'll see some of that alongside Zoroastrianism. But yeah, so there's a lot of these different beliefs and cultures that really clash. Military is a very specific aspect of it, and there's a lot of overlap with historical context, especially a part of the Sino-Japanese War, but also alongside other things less popular, such as the Korean War and so on and so forth, as well as a certain period that would be comparable to 1920s Prohibition or the Roaring Sixties, right? I think that's what it was called, right? Where you had gangster and mob culture, right? Every country has that sort of thing. Post-industrialization, Italy had it with their gangs in Sicily, right? The Nostra Costa. You have the Russian organized crime, right? Organized crime would be considered in this category of this military section, Junshi, right? Junshi usually refers to modern military theory, but it can extend as far back as to ancient Greece. The Greek hegemony road. There's a very famous author. I don't know his name because I don't read his works, but that was a very popular one. Xiling Empire, I think, was one of his other works. He writes very, very detailed works about Greek history. There was another author that did Roman history, but was not as successful because his content wasn't as in depth or well researched. Oh, The Fox of France. That one didn't do as well because it was just very controversial. But various military matters based on the French Republic, the French Revolution, right? Greek matters. Those are all military contexts in terms of European history, right? So that's where we get into the historical fantasy track. Historical fantasy is almost reserved for Chinese historical content rather than, Western or European historical fiction. So any historical fiction of that sort will probably be bundled into magic, fantasy, science fiction, and very rarely Western fantasy. That's what it'd be bundled under. But military fiction, let's talk about what I've read. There's so many interesting ones. There is the whole military category, just modern arms weaponry, right? We're talking, this can be anything from military development. This is called technology flow, right? Technology sharing. This is system-based web novel. This is very much along the ideas of merchants, of establishing a business tycoon, as they would say, right? Because tycoon is what they'd use in like Roblox and Obies. Business tycoon sort of industries, technology development. A lot of business web novels will go into that route. Even like, what is it called? Urban ability web novels will go into that route. A lot of future information will talk about that route. Usually, business is much more mundane, so it goes much more into casual and entertainment culture rather than pure military, but technology and military intimately connected, since the invention of the internet. So it's kind of hard to separate military technology and innovation from what is it, the civilian or the commercial innovation, right? Because iPhones at a high enough level, the computer chips are used for military industries, and so a lot of commercial industries can become militarized, right? Commercial factories to military factories, hoi four. But specifically in the military genre, there's various things. Arms dealing, right? commercialization. So various military paths, right? Air Force, right? There was one that was about Lockheed, like Military Gemini. I'll probably put up the titles here. What else was there? Oh yeah, yeah. So a lot of this is the official military stance. So rising up the military ranks, whether you're working in the factory, produce manufacturing for military technologies, that's actually much more in the urban life section because that's much more considered with the civilian sector. And then you have like rising up the ranks of becoming a modern military general. Oh man, if I can, I want to put in the modern military general in General Hogan's. General Hogan, that one's more of the Fifth Street School and Disney Recess, what that's based on. But Modern Military General, the song, as well as the other one, like not Horatio Nelson, but there was a great British TV show. I'll hopefully pull up some visuals. But yeah, so that's one route, right? Military logistics, technology flow, technology sharing. You'll notice anytime I talk about military, there will be an agreement that's always pulled up, which is the Wassenaar Agreement. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. It was in the Belgiums or the Netherlands. I'm pretty sure it's Belgium and Luxembourg, one of those areas, about technology sharing among the major power countries. Notably, one of the countries excluded from the Wassenaar Agreement is China, and that's why it's so well discussed. A lot of historical military events, such as the Yugoslav embassy bombing, that not a lot of people are familiar with. I barely even knew about it until like, it came up. Didn't realize that was such a controversial topic. It's huge. Military occupation of Korea, that's always a big one because, you know, North and South Korea. It's very interesting to see it from a maybe not a North Korean positive perspective, but more Sinocentric Chinese positive perspective. Very, very fascinating. Not very well discussed though, because even though it's considered that the U.S. lost the Vietnam and Korean War, it's just not talked about. It really isn't. Like Vietnam is more popular for I think U.S. war because you know the U.S. actually lost that one, but the Korean War, I have heard nary a peep about you know the Korean conflict just because it's I guess it's much more popularized than Korea itself, but that makes sense because I don't know. There's a lot of Korean culture, not a lot of people familiar with, like the Chungseong Dynasty, the Goryeo Dynasty. There's even a third kingdom, but I can't remember off the top of my head. Various vassalization and tributes from, you know, Japan, Southeast Asia to China and whatnot. But that's too much. That's not real military history. So that's one route. You have the military route, pure military, where you become a fighter pilot. This is very much in line with the physical tier or like the sports background, right? Where you're a character and you slowly become more powerful. You'll see that, as I said, there's a lot of crossover, like the military soldier king stereotype. But as I said, because it's much more concerned with civilian life that goes into business, right? Where it's like, oh, I just came out of this mercenary corps, this mercenary group, and then I go back into urban culture, and I do all this wuxia style urban intrigue level stuff, right? Because you have a lot of this military power, friendships and gangs. Okay, so that's one, pure military route. Second one is called domestic military, otherwise known as the police, right? While lawyers, that profession is considered under urban life, which very few lawyers very much take on a mystery route. The military route would be considered urban police, right? Police has very much aspects. There's the bright side and then undercover police. Undercover police will go into a third genre, the mystery military genre, which, if you're thinking along those concentric circles, we'll get into that specific subgenre. Military police is so unique, and this is what we call the gangster style web novels. And all of this is concerning usually Hong Kong, but sometimes it will extend beyond its borders into the drug war, the Asian drug war that we see alongside Malaysia, India, Afghanistan, Pakistan, the various drug industries of India, and that portion of Southeast Asia. That even extends to the Philippines, but the Philippines is one area of contention in military history, but most of it will be focused on India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, because that's where a lot of drug industries are. Some of the hugest chemical manufacturers outside of Europe would be those countries, as I mentioned before, alongside China, of course. China's big in pharmaceuticals as well. Drug industry is a big thing. There's a lot of political conflict, economic conflict, even alongside the political tensions. Now, domestic terrorism is one thing, right? Throughout history, I think domestic terrorism aligns alongside what we called rebellion, right? things such as democracy would be considered a type of rebellion against the aristocracy. Hopefully, I'll be able to get more into the idea of rebellion and whatnot in a later topic. I've always wanted to talk about that because it's such non-aligned mainstream thinking. Anytime you're called a rebel or a grassroots movement, it's basically non-mainstream thinking. And it's very unique and it's also very dangerous. We'll get more into that when I go more in depth into certain military matters, but this is just a general overview. So there are some various great web novels with great quotes because all of it just talks about human nature, right? Of how to be an upright military police. Policemen have families that they have to feed, but there's also the sense of righteousness and corruptness, right? In one of the Hong Kong web novels, there's a couple like the Xinjiang Nobles, the Hong Kong Police Department web novel. There was a third one. There, not like the Tokyo, the literary art era and like tycoons. A lot of times, film, police, and gangsters will go into a certain style. A lot of it talks about Tokyo gangsters, but I've seen some Chinese gangsters that, if you're always a Chinese, more a Hong Kong gangster, it will almost always extend into the entertainment industry. It just one of those facts of life. KTV, right? Domestically, they rarely talk about it in China except for the negative context and urban life, right? So gangsters are what we call the rivers and lakes, the Jianghu, the normal populace, but it's very much underground, right? The red light district, the brothels. And most of that is associated with Hong Kong because that's where a lot of economic prosperity is in. So there's more organized crime. But organized crime exists across China. The biggest known one outside China would be called the Triads. But even then, I'm not too familiar with the Chinese organized crime sphere, as I am compared to maybe the cartels in South America or the Eastern European organized crime in Europe. But yeah, there's organized crime in Asia, even in Japan, right? Political dealings on a lower scale, on a local scale, always deal with the rivers and lakes and gangsters. But most specifically, for whatever reason, Hong Kong police is the place to be because of the political system there. The conflict on the bright side between the British government and the Chinese government is so unique because their political governing style is so different. I think most people aren't aware, but even the British police are relatively corrupt. Now, they don't talk about it a lot because they have a lot of p positive public perception from the naval intelligence that would eventually lead into the MI6, right? Scotland Yard, right? Domestic detectives and that sense of the naval intelligence model spreading across the rest of the world into various black rooms and espionage. MI2, MI6. What else would there be? Scotland Yard, that's more domestic. That's like a mainline detective, and how that extended upon the not SAS. It's this I think it's like the SSS, the super Oh, so oh, OSS, right? That's the predecessor of the CIA, FBI. They have a lot of these domestic detective cases. I forget what it's called in France, something international, GIGN or whatever in Germany, right? These special forces. Special forces is encompassed in this military subgenre tag, right? As I said, special forces returning to the civilian sector, that's urban life. But special forces in and of itself, that would be sorry. It took me a while to finally find the words for that. But I really liked the Hong Kong style because they talk about a lot of this political drama. There's the political office in charge of promotion, right? These are the people who notice their whole job. The political office is basically the HR department. They decide who gets promoted or demoted. Then you have internal affairs. There's no internal affairs major department across a lot of special forces. It's just called the military police, MP. But the gerrymandering or whatever. But yes, internal affairs is so interesting. California Bureau of Investigation, whatnot, CBI. Sorry, but that was from a TV show. Law and Order. But yeah, internal affairs is such a bright side, dark side type of thing. You have undercover operations. And there's a quote that really stuck with me from this Hong Kong police web novel. It said, "The job of the political office is to make sure you're ready for promotion, right? Everyone who gets promoted must have done something important, right? But the job of internal affairs is to decide who is guilty, right? If you get promoted, that's not our office. Our office is to make sure you are clean, right? And obviously, no one is clean, right? If the pond is too clear, nothing can live, right? We call these clear ponds." Right, you have to have some sort of diversity. But you also have to have an element of righteousness. There's always this political chaos to finding a political backer, being from a family. Obviously, those things come with responsibilities in and of itself, but you need to have some sort of political backer or political capability or personal ability to rise through the ranks, whether it's through friendships and networking and connection, right? But you still have to be accomplished in something, knowing someone accomplished and promoting them. And then also, there's also that sense of being wary of other people. This political intrigue you will be familiar with in historical context, this is the same conflict between nobles, aristocrats, landed aristocrats, inherited aristocracy, right? The new nobles, the old nobles. I'm not going to get into too many parallels. Hopefully, I'm able to pull up a graph, but this is just more modern political conflict. It's all politics, right? One of the things I would have wished to said was war is a continuation of politics. I think that's Clausewitz, military visualized history, and Roman history. So many army and generals, a lot of great people. Historius Civilius. If you want stories, watch Historius Civilius. You want to know the geopolitics at a very base level skill, strategy stuff. Caspian Report, they do some great work. Vox and Wall Street Journal, they have some great visuals on very specific conflicts. But those guys very much armchair historians, military theories. Armchair historian is actually a channel, and then extra credits history as well. Great, great, great sources of military history if you're interested in that. Especially Greek history, with and just a variety of topics depending on how you love your levels of interest in general military conflict and political history. Military history visualized goes so much into depth with that as well. But yeah, so that's one genre. Then the other genre I touched upon, which is this idea of espionage. Undercover and espionage are two different things. Undercover is still an arm of the military and special forces, domestic forces, right? Domestic terrorism and whatnot. Domestic terrorism also applies to ideological or cultural construction, right? Why was the Black Panthers on the military watch list? Why is communism on military watch list? NKVD, Gestapo, they'd always monitor these political scholars. And hopefully, if I have time, I'll be able to get into political prisoners. Honestly, the things I learned from political prisoners reading some of these, actually, it was from a fantasy web novel, chilled me because political prisoners, the only thing they've done wrong is they've thought wrong. And that is a very dangerous idea. The freedom of speech is not free, and people have, in history have paid for it in dictatorships across the world. There's this line in The War Photographer because it talks about war stories that was very chilling. And I think this has a lot to do with it's just a very dark facet of the human mind, of political systems, maybe across Russia and its influence that extends to China. This is very much aligned with the Maoism, where the Mao is saying, power comes from the barrel of a gun, right? And this applies to Gulag prisoners, right? Gulag prisoners, what did they do wrong? Some of them were just born to the wrong people. They criticized the political government, and this is why freedom of speech is so precious, because you weren't allowed to say what you say. I honestly, freedom of speech is being allowed to say what you want to say and not facing the political repercussions of it. I'm allowed to think a certain way. And as long as it doesn't cross a certain line, Oliver Wendell Holmes, such as, dangerous and inciting speech, yeah, rebellion is that cannot be allowed. And we'll get into that in terms of ideas of citizenship, internment camps, right? The Japanese internment camps, and this very foreign hostility, to non-country citizens, but ethnic citizen of ethnicity, right? Xenophobia and those categories, but that goes more into military history. Political prisoners. But yeah, there was this saying from The War Photographer that goes, these prisoners, we do not allow them to even have guns. So why do we give them the freedom of thought, right? Because, the pen is mightier than the sword. It goes back to the ideological construction, things such as the Spanish Civil War, right? This idea of communism, Francoism, which is a sort of dictatorship that kind of leaned toward fascism, and then the various ideas of Western democracy being a sort of a coalition or gang in and of itself. I don't know what the military term is besides alliance, maybe. treaty organization, but they're a faction, a bloc. There's the Democratic bloc or this gang, and then there's like other blocs like dictatorships, fascism, and whatnot. But there was this line that just chilled me, which is that went, we do not even give these prisoners guns. Why do we allow them to entertain even these ideas? You can't not only break their physical body, but you also break their mental spirit. You're not, they can't even be allowed to think a certain way. This is what they would call cultural education, ideological construction, cultural education, right? This actually led me down a conversation, reminding me of a conversation I had with a friend, which is what determines a citizen, right? There is certain information that makes you a citizen, and that thing that makes you a citizen is education. Where you live, where you are raised, will culturally educate you on the political systems and on the politically relevant history. In Asia, and specifically China, they call it cultural education, and that's not wrong. We call that history class. History is written by the victors, and so is culture, right? If you do not know the political systems, whether it's the aristocracy, whether it's not meritocracy, monarchy, right? Whether you know the royal bloodlines, right? You live in China, you need to know the history of the emperors. You live in Japan, you need to know the history of the shogunate. You live in the England or France, you need to know the history of the monarchy, right? Germany, you will always know the Junkers in Germany, right? Basically, the emperors. Junker just means emperor. Kaiser actually is emperor. Caesar, right? Tsar is abbreviation of Caesar. So you will know these political history. Having that knowledge of political history is what we call cultural education. That determines a citizen, right? You need to know how your government works. All of that. And that's why when you take citizenship tests, when you immigrate and take citizenship tests, they quiz you on these political systems and these ideological ideals. Cultural education is ingrained in historical education. And that is why there's a lot of crossover between military history and historical fantasy. But anyway, let's go back into this espionage aspect. Espionage. Important things are said thrice. That's why you say things three times in Chinese language. The biggest one, obviously, Sino-Japanese War. Post-World War I, pre-World War II. We call this the interwar era. Or some people like to lump World War I and World War II into just the World Wars. But this interwar era, this period of the Great Depression, has a lot of economic history tied to it. The German Great Depression, the World Great Depression, as well as how countries in Europe and America alleviated the Great Depression. A lot of that prosperity had to come from weaker countries, basically the scramble for Africa, African colonies, right? The Japanese and Chinese colonies, right? The Southeast Asian colonies of the Dutch and Portuguese in the Straits of Malacca, right? Malaysia, Singapore, all of these places were colonized. The Dutch East Indies, it would be known, the Spice Islands. And so a lot of that economic prosperity came from overseas, right? America obviously extended its hand into Japan. Russia obviously extended its hand into Korea, and China. And Europe basically extended its hand into the colonies as well as some American assistance, right? America definitely reaped the benefits of that war. But espionage is this idea of information intelligence. I've talked about this before, but military intelligence, the value of a spy, because I think it, oh, I don't think I ever released the recording, but it was basically a recording for Codename Flame. The value of a spy comes from information, and that information must come at a specific time. Information that comes too late is worthless, and information the earlier the better, right? But they're also, espionage is so interesting because a spy needs to protect itself. It needs to have or show personal ability, but then take that personal ability and transmit that information across the line, across enemy lines. A spy's job either is very, their style of loyalty is so ingrained in them that they're almost fanatics. They're almost like religiously fanatic. I forget what the other term is. They're almost extreme. They have extreme political beliefs. Or two, they are stunningly realistic. They do it not for personal gain. They calculate everything, right? Some political espionage agents are doing it for pure self-worth or greed, right? Like they just want political achievements. But they also must be able to be sacrificed at a moment's notice, Right. They if an important piece of information is there, they need people to sacrifice themselves, right? The most important job of a spy is to be able to protect themselves and make themselves valuable and transmit information. The second a spy stops transmitting information, they are a dangerous lead along that spy network, right? That's why they call spy masters. So that's why spy masters are so dangerous. You'll learn alongside espionage along these investigative techniques, because espionage is basically just a mystery military web novel, but there are even more subgenres of that, right? There is the investigative route where you are in the spy war. The spy war is a military genre in and of itself because it's such a big subgenre. You are either a military detective, military police, internal affairs, as they say, trying to weed out counterintelligence, as they would say. There is espionage in and of itself, right, where you're engaged in this political struggle of trying to become a spy and obtain this relevant military information, right? And make sure that not only do you get access to that information, but transmit it to the right people. If you transmit it to the wrong people, some people just use it for political gain or bury it. If that information is not in the right people's hands, right, to the corresponding political level, right, because some people handle the low-level affairs, some people handle the high-level picture, right? So it's just always this dangerous balance. And spies in and of itself, such a unique genre, because alongside just this military history and ideological construction, they talk about a lot of very interesting facets, right? Unit 731, right? That is what it was called, like Academic Prevention and Water Supply Unit. It's a very, very dark history, things I won't go into. Very different from things that happened and occurred in Nanjing. As I said, these are very politically sensitive topics. If it was a positive note, it'd be called political correctness, but I don't feel safe talking about it. Even though I live in a freedom of speech positive country, there are some, I don't know. I'm guilty of complacency, of not discussing this in depth. But this is what we call non-aligned or non-mainstream thinking. Like, when you have knowledge that is not considered mainstream, it can be considered dangerous. You get into conspiracy territory of, flat Earth. So I want to take this from a very surface level and not go too much into it. There have been historical parallels such as MK Ultra. They buried it with something else, not Operation Paperclip. But MK Ultra is buried, COINTELPRO. MK Ultra, they tried to bury the COINTELPRO. Still a very politically sensitive topic, right? Leading to the modern day prism. COINTELPRO is basically the Patriot Act, which is just spying on its own citizens. Everyone does that. The Seven Eyes Alliance, plus AUKUS, right? The Five Eyes Alliance. So Sweden, France, Germany, the England, US, Australia, and Switzerland. They had intelligence program purely based on monitoring, domestic terrorism in its own citizens, as well as intelligence agencies around the world. The Five Eyes program is a smaller subsection of it, which is, I think, America, Germany, France. Sweden is just so politically involved in this espionage in England. Intelligence also includes spying on your own citizens, right? And we're not going to go into Gestapo and NKVD levels of KGB levels of espionage, but they do exist. CIA, FBI, Gestapo and whatnot. I don't know too much about the modern day intelligence agencies. What is it? The French Foreign Legion? No, that's foreign. I forget what something international. Right, because the Federal Bureau of Investigation is actually based off France, not Germany. SAS. No, so that's different special forces. GIGN. Another special forces branch. Delta. Naval SEALs. Sorry, where was I in? Intelligence organizations. You'll see it across a spectrum of web novels as well. Joy of Life, Chronicles of Guhai. That's actually Wuxia based. Joy of Life is huge. That was the one that got me into this whole rabbit hole. I didn't acknowledge it at the time because I always thought it was empire building, but no, it deals with intelligence organizations. World of Deities, but that's more ideological fantasy rather than military fantasy. But this idea of intelligence organizations extends beyond that. I think Return of 80, that was the most unique web novel I've read in recent times within the last 2 months. Beautifully written espionage web novel that dealt with industrialization. Noble Mage Behind the Scenes has some facets. Kingdom's Bloodline. All of this empire building and political history talks about this value of information. And a lot of this extends into the political systems of the era, right? Of old nobles versus new nobles. This distinction between the merchant class and the aristocratic class, right? What is a merchant? Why were merchants not valued in ancient times but are so valued today, right? Everyone has their own money manager. Why is right next to the CEO, the CFO? Money is power, right? In today's modern era of systems, because everything is above board now. There's a sense of organization among the chaos, right? You can't just kill someone along the streets. In the past, you could. Murder was allowed. It was legalized and protected by the government in which it lived in the era of feudalism and monarchy. Merchants were literally piles of money to be grabbed as long as you murdered them. You just needed to communicate with another aristocrat that said, hey, that's my merchant. Kill him and we'll take his money, right? Banks could not have existed. Banks, a centralized banking institution did not exist. That was just the aristocrats. Banking would have eroded the power of the aristocrats. So banking was not legalized until commercial power flowed into the hands of its citizens. When citizens became much more productive, so too did the protection over its citizens, right? Citizens were just serfs were just cattle. They were not humans. They were just a product for the aristocrats, right? The landed aristocrats were people who had land, were very much different from the inherited aristocrats, aristocrats who only had a title bestowed by their family, right? Old money, new money. And aristocrats were basically banking sectors in and of themselves. They were personal banks, but they held a much stronger centralized force than most people were aware of. And then you had the king who, through political connection, just ruled the country. And power, their connection to nobles was another power. Checks and balances, of course. So merchants just did not exist because merchants did not have the power to hire knights. The second you hire knights, you were not a merchant. You were a noble, right? And so a lot of this political organization stems back to that, right? This idea of intelligence organizations, the spy network, goes back to Elizabethan, right? It goes all the way back to ancient Egypt. But even in China, the eunuchs, right, you had the bright side, which was the yamen, the court system, and then you also had the espionage, the intelligence organization in the background. And this goes a lot into empire building genre. There's a lot of overlap between fantasy. But specifically on this subgenre of the military subgenre, espionage is huge. The way they talk about these politically sensitive topics is so unique. And what makes espionage different, right? Why is espionage so different besides being a mystery novel is they're very open with it, almost a little too open on this idea of torture. There has to be this idea of punishment, right? Punishment in the modern day is just jail. This is why political prisoners are so scares the heck out of me. Hopefully I'm never important enough to be a political prisoner, but honestly, man, it doesn't make the prospect of a political prisoner any less terrifying. Because most people aren't aware of it. Like, you know, I don't think people who organize a protest even know what a political prisoner is unless they're politically active, right? To have knowledge of it, to not be ignorant of something, knowledge is power, right? And so, as I said, when you touch upon non-aligned, non-mainstream thinking, it's very dangerous knowledge. In science and academia, they call it like non-mainstream physics. I forget there's a specific term for non-mainstream physics. Basically, they call them crackpots, basically. People who don't do the modern research. Because there's a generic force for a certain line of thinking. And a second that branch, where the branch of science is wrong, they just transition to a new branch of science. Right? But, you know, people who don't have mainstream thinking are called crackpots. People like Newton was considered a crackpot. Right, the spooks, right? You get into this idea of conspiracy because most people are quite ignorant. This goes quite in depth and into the weeds because there's just too much knowledge there, and it's just very dangerous to have that knowledge, right? To be aware of things like Fort Detrick and MK Ultra, you really have to go down a conspiracy rabbit hole, right? Things that they don't want you to know. Most people who have political knowledge of that know that's criminally wrong. Like, the facts are just so wrong, but it's because they are willing to be wrong that they are able to uncover those sorts of things. But that doesn't make the people who research that any less disconcerting. Right, to be interested in things like MK Ultra and COINTELPRO, you have to be willing to be wrong, right? The people who have that knowledge are never going to talk about it because they're aligned with the mainstream or the government thinking. And this goes this onto this idea of rebellion, right? Rebellion means you're dissatisfied with the status quo, and that is a very dangerous place to be. Whether it's 1776 signing the Constitution, or even more modern grassroots periods of protest. That's why you always domestic terrorism always is aligned with political activism, whether it's communism and whatnot. Reading a lot of these espionage web novels makes me aware of why the Supreme Court would rule for Japanese internment. Japanese internment is one of those black spots of American history, but there's a reason why they ruled the way that they did, why the Germans were suppressed. There's a sad submarine story about this German artist who was persecuted by his own community and then eventually committed suicide by running to protect his paintings. It was like that summer with the of the German submarine. Very dark story, children's story even, young adult fiction. Yeah, and why there's this sense of xenophobia, why people are responsible not for their citizenship, but for the actions of the country of which they have ethnic ties to, right? The second you are an immigrant, there's this idea that immigrants are a lower class citizen. And in essence, that's kind of how they are treated in a political sense, right? I think about it and I try to think, in the US or in England, are there any high-ranking Russian politicians? None come to mind. Are there any high-level Iranian politicians? None come to mind. Are there any high-level Pakistani politicians? None come to mind. When you go to India, that's a little different, right? You have not Rishi, Rishi Sunak, right? High-level CEOs are all Indian, but think of like high-ranking Chinese politicians. I can't think of any. Japanese, there are some. Native American, South American, there are some. But certain countries will never get that political representation because they're too minority of a minority. Like there will be, I don't think there will ever be an Afghanistan politician, but there may be Muslim politician. Those are special. But yeah, one is just a minority, and two is immigrants are treated as lower class citizens, not necessarily of their own volition, but just because identity is such an important factor. These family connections, these personal connections, right? Like Ronald Reagan, like why are like all these political politicians all a certain color or of a certain background? Because they're trustworthy. Their family have been with the country for years, and so they're politically reliable. I don't like talking about political matters, but military, as I said, or as Clausewitz would said, is a continuation of politics, or war is a continuation of politics by other means. And so military and politics will always be intimately connected. As much as they try and disconnect those services of civilian politicians, right, there's a reason why the highest ranking military official in democracies are always civilian, right? The president or the prime minister. But within those military spheres and networks, the people with the most political capitals are always in the military system. We're not going to go too much into it. Civilian and military sectors, even like things such as classification levels, classification levels of SSCI, top secret designations, and whatnot. Those all go into the military system, the military industrial complex, the military triangle. Sorry, I'm getting to the weeds with this and very less on web novels, but there's a plethora of stories that you will not get in John Grisham novels. John Grisham, very interesting legal thriller, spy thriller, but we're getting into a genre of stories that I don't think have been explored. You see things like I Survived and whatnot, but those are based on real history. Military fantasy is just not a big genre because the traditional publishing industry is really not caught up with where digital and publishing is at. But then again, you have to be a certain type of person to enjoy military fiction. And I think one interesting distinction is this taste or willingness to show certain things, right? In the West, you know, if you look at the codes, the NCAA codes, right, of what you were allowed to show and you were not allowed to show. You're not allowed to show nudity. You're not allowed to show promiscuity on screen. You were not allowed to show anything not like there were codes for what the filming industry were allowed to show, right? Guns were not allowed on screen. Drugs were not allowed on screen. Nowadays they are. But one thing that's not allowed on screen is punishment, right? Alongside what would be known as torture. There's a difference between torture and punishment. Torture means you want to extract information on someone. Punishment just means it's so distasteful. In Asia, there's much greater taste, you're not allowed to show drugs on screen, but you're allowed to show torture on screen. And it's so fascinating to see that, right? Like, even torture techniques are shown, which is chilling in and of itself. Things like the tiger bench, hot water, obviously, salt water, veritasium. I think it's because in the West they use technology, right? Waterboarding is considered thing, but most of it's just based on technology, on chemicals like veritasium and thing, because they have a lot more technical abilities, right, and medical abilities. So it's not humane, but you don't have to go to these low-level techniques. But oh man, I don't want to talk about it. I was just surprised, right? You watch Person of Interest, Chuck, right, The Intersect, other espionage, right, Law and Order. Death is allowed on screen, sure. But military affairs always is shown through the lens of personal heroism, right? Spooks are called soldiers, right? Urban soldiers, right? Urban police and whatnot. The domestic arm of the military branch. And so they're always shown through personal valorance. And I would love to talk about valorance throughout military history, but this has just gone on way too long. But yeah, you cannot show torture on screen. That is like one of the things that no one will ever show, just because I think most of the public audience is squeamish. They don't want to see that anyway. And I probably wouldn't want to see it. But you watch any Sino-Japanese style story of espionage, and yeah, even in like things like The Blacklist, very, very minor levels of it. Man, I'm not gonna get too much into it, but like the whole nails thing. Oh, okay, let's not go into that. Nails is like one of the most sensitive parts of the body, alongside like the temple, and the eyes. Let's not go there. Sorry. Like, even if I were comfortable with it, it's all about like mainstream thinking, and so let's not go there. But yeah, I thought that was a very interesting distinction. And so this idea of personal sacrifice is much more personally connected, right? Because there's this political education, personal ties to it. Codename Flame, a lot of even the Infinite Flow stories like Actor's Reincarnation of Heaven, talk about spies through this idea of sacrifice. There's this word, it's not crazy or extreme fanaticism, because you have to be a fanatic, you have to be an extremist to survive those conditions, right? The idea of communism, right, of the DPRK, of the CCCP. Before the CCCP became the giant that it is today, it was an undergrounds movement, right? You had to be an extreme fanatic. Now, there are certain political figures that, as I said, knowing it or sympathizing with it is politically sensitive. There was a certain murder of a scholar in Hong Kong, the Red Scarves movement. Honestly, it is an injustice. But as I said, even labeling it as injustice is worrisome. You had this scholar who was murdered in Hong Kong. I don't even know his name. But I know that the murder of the scholar was such an opposition to Chiang Kai-shek, which was the KMT, Kuomintang. The KMT is like the abbreviation for the Chinese characters, which actually should be GMD, Guo, meaning starting with G, Ming. But I think that just had to do with the romanization of characters at the time. Wei Giles, I believe, was the language. Conlang for the romanization of Chinese characters in Pinyin used KMT, right? That's why you have Su Xinhua. They love to use TSU instead of SU, CHING instead of Q. But let's not get into that. The whole how Chinese characters got their ping is interesting in and of itself, as well as simplified language. But there's a reason why communism uses simplified language, and you know, the party flag. All is very interesting history. But yeah, Chairman Mao did have to go on that 1,000-mile march, 10,000-mile march, right? The battle during the 8th National Army, and a lot of these political distinctions are so interesting. One of the web novels that I recently read, Cicada. And as I said, admission to reading this is scary. At least I haven't read any anti-Japanese literature because of my distaste for it. It's just like saying You can't read Mein Kampf and support it. You just can't. That's not mainstream thinking. If you read Mein Kampf and support it, you're a Nazi. And you're a political plague at that point. You can't I no one will network with you. Well, not no one will network with you, but mainstream people will network with you. So it's very dangerous to walk that fine political line. But things like Cicada talked about like this underground movement. Obviously they have to because of political censorship. So yeah, you gotta understand web novels are politically censored. I'm trying to walk this fine line. So espionage will only go to a certain depth. Certain lines will not be crossed, but it also means that the novels that they produce are very well written in that sense. And so this underground movement, they talk a lot about like these political, I'll probably talk more when I talk about these web novels, but this political movement of when you're along a certain party and you go along the wrong route, you will get murdered by the rebel organization. And while the KMT were very politically competent in connecting with the West, they also practiced appeasement in a certain style because they wanted power. And with the way political history and historical trends went, that was the wrong route, right? The CCCP eventually won the battle, right? The democratic forces eventually became communist aligned. Oh, Twilight Struggle, eh? Board game. Very fun board game, by the way. Love to watch that. Oh, such a good board. I wish there was a Twilight Struggle for Asia. There needs to be a Twilight Struggle Asia version, but it's too difficult. Because Twilight Struggle is a global board game, very Eurocentric. Makes sense though. A lot of wars. There's so many facets I never got into, the economic facet. But I am just so exhausted. I wish I could script this, but I cannot think of a good way to do so. Anyway, that's about. I'm gonna keep my meta commentary to low. That's about it for the military genre and its subgenres. One day I'll go into the sports subgenre. It's called the physical tier, but they also go into other sports such as Go. And I've talked about it before. I just don't know if they're released, but man, such a politically charged genre. Especially because this is Chinese web novels. I don't. Military is just not a very well discussed topic. Because there's no taste for it. There just isn't. For personal heroism, alongside certain things such as the Blacklist or person of interest in terms of technology, yes. But there's just no interest in military unless it's soldiers, right? I can talk about why soldiers look down on spies, right? Nowadays, it's slightly more glorified, but it all obviously goes with military valor. Military valor died, I think. After the Napoleonic era, because there's no military valor getting shot. Military valor comes from swords, right? There's this great British TV show, not General Jogan's Heroes, but the other military one, British TV show. British TV shows are great. BBC great. Oh yeah, Sharp. Sharp is great. Lieutenant Sharp and modern military general just shows this whole political intrigue and political achievements. But post World War One, World War Two, yeah, military achievement comes in different forms. Now it's all about technology, air force, right? Space warfare, spa war. Is it spa war? There was, I think it's called spa war. Yeah, it is naval information warfare and systems. It's so interesting to see how so much intelligence comes from naval agencies. But also, you gotta understand. Naval agencies is how you get collect information from around the world, right? It's not even the Air Force. Air Force, yeah, Delta Force is a very premier fighting force, but it's all naval intelligence. Dang, man. Like, yeah, the CIA and GIGN and SAS. I don't, MI6, that's what it is. But it's all military intelligence is always going to be with signal intelligence, right? Obviously, a lot of it's military. Man, I look at Spey War, and they've eventually migrated it to Air Force, and then they moved it to Space Defense. It's a joke, honestly. I look at the Space Initiative, SDI, the Space Command. Space Command reminds me of the Ethics Committee in the SCP universe. Yes, the ethics committee is considered a joke on the outside, but I guarantee you on the inside there's so much political sensitivity along what is it called? not geological satellites, meteorological satellites, basically weather systems. Right. Yeah. The space. This. I guarantee you, the Space Command is a joke among the military forces in the U.S. But just like the Ethics Committee, the power they hold is probably immense because space is such a huge industry. But compared to like traditional industry, I think they intentionally want to keep it a joke. But anyway, enough about military. I think it's kind of getting boring. I've delved too deep. I need to convince it, to figure out a way to condense this 20 minutes. But that's it for episode 56, or the genre spotlight on military aspects. I definitely felt like I talked about it, but I guess I did a Codename Flame recording, but I never kept it. Oh, I probably deleted the files too. That's unfortunate. Well, that's it for episode 56, I guess. I couldn't be YouTuber Side to make a podcast instead. Genre spotlight on military genre. And we'll stop here.